Welcome to Jersey Guys Sports, your sports talk home for the Yanks, the Giants, the Rangers, and the Rutgers-Carlton Knights. I'm your host, Don. I want to thank you for listening. Now, today I'm going to be talking about the New York Giants, led by quarterback Tommy DeVito, stunned the Packers Monday night and won 24-22. I'm also going to talk about Rutgers beating Seton Hall Sunday to get a desperately, desperately needed win. So let's go ahead and get started. So I'm going to go ahead and start with the New York Giants, and our Giants stunned the Packers on Monday Night Football, winning 24-22 with new quarterback Tommy DeVito leading the Giants basically all night long. It was a pretty exciting game, I have to say, and I haven't seen a lot of exciting Giant games in a long time, particularly ones that we actually won, and this one was. There was an earlier game in the year, I think, against Buffalo, which was exciting, you know, but we didn't win. But this one was a good game. Each team scored in the last 2 minutes of the game. The Packers took a 22-21 lead on a touchdown with just over a minute and a half remaining. And then Tommy DeVito led the Giants down the field for what was a walk-off field goal as time expired for what was really a truly fun, wild ride at the Meadowlands. It was a really breezy Monday night, and it was kind of a fun game to watch and probably a fun game to be at. Now, DeVito was pretty accurate as a quarterback all night, and you know, on the game-winning drive, he threw really a dart to Wandale Robinson for 32 yards to set up the game-winning field goal. DeVito also had several big runs and mostly got the ball out on time. He had a little trouble with holding the ball too long, and you know, he definitely tried it, it looks like, to get the ball out on time a little more. DeVito ended up being, let's see, where is it, 17 for 21, for 158 yards. He had a TD and no pick, so that was good. Plus, he's kind of fun to look at, right? If you're a Giants fan, particularly if you're an Italian from New Jersey, like this, like, embodies, like, the New York or New Jersey, Northern Jersey, Italian, you know, what are you going to do? Tommy DeVito, he's got his father there in the stands with the, you know, symbolism, and he's got his agent. If you saw this guy's agent, Tommy DeVito, it's so funny. He looked like a consigliere, this guy, like a black hat and a black suit. He looked like, of course, this is, you know, Tommy DeVito's agent. So funny. Apparently, Tommy DeVito's dad and mom had like 300 people in a particular section of the Giants Stadium parking lot, tailgating, serving Italian food. It's just such a interesting aspect to, you know, in addition to his good play, you have the sort of North Jersey home kid who lives with his parents, his mom makes his bed, he lives at home with his brother, and you know, he grew up 10 miles from Giants Stadium, went to Don Bosco Prep, and, you know, now he's the starting quarterback for the New York Giants, you know, basically, you know, as our third string quarterback from the practice squad. Now he's our starting quarterback, and for one night in prime time on Monday Night Football, he looked really good, and he did a lot of things to help the Giants win, that's for sure. In addition to throwing well, he also ran. Well, he ran for 71 yards, and he did so in some key spots. Really, he escaped the Green Bay pass rush multiple times, you know, when it appeared he was going to go nowhere. And he kind of made something out of nothing and showed a little bit of speed, a few moves. I thought he was really good running the ball. He hit that big play, like I said, to Wandale Robinson at the end. And speaking of Wandale Robinson, he really had a breakout game, finally. Finally, this guy, right? He caught, let me see, where is it? 6 passes for 79 yards. And in addition, Robinson looks really, really fast for the first time, I think, as a Giant, as in like lightning fast. He looks significantly faster than he has in previous games. And he really looked like the fastest player on the field Monday night, I have to tell you. We might have something in Wandale. I was kind of questioning this pick for 2 years now. Obviously, he was taken in the second round in last year's pick in 2022. Draft, and you know, he played okay last year, caught a couple short passes. He's a slot receiver who generally doesn't run, you know, more than 8-10 yards down to catch a route, you know, to catch a pass. Those are the routes he runs, and he did okay. And then he got hurt for the rest of the year last year. This year he came back and he's looked okay. You know, he's had a couple catches, but Monday night was really a breakout game. He caught, you know, some longer passes, made a brilliant catch on the sideline. He kept 2 feet in bounds while he reached out of bounds to catch it. It was a spectacular catch. Really good. All in all, he caught 6 passes for 79 yards. And including that big one of 32 at the end of the game that set the Giants up for the game-winning field goal. So finally, this 2022 second-round pick is starting to live up to his, you know, draft position at long last, and it was good to see. So I'm looking at the receiving stats, thinking about that now. I had that somewhere. Where is it? Yeah, he had 79 yards, and then the next, he had 6 receptions, and the next closest one was Saquon Barkley with 3. So really, there wasn't a lot of completions to go around. Hodgins had 2 and a nice touchdown catch. Slayton had 2. Bellinger, the tight end, had 2 and barely getting the first down. And Jalen Hyatt had 2. I got to say, as the season goes on, Hyatt looks a little worse and Wandale Robinson looks a little better every game I see him. So hopefully Hyatt, you know, can continue to evolve and play better as the season goes on. We'll see. Obviously, a lot of a receiver's ability to do things depends on the quarterback getting the ball to them. So we'll have to see. Hyatt definitely dropped a pass, a really easy pass early in the game, which drove me nuts. A couple other quick notes on the Giants. Kayvon Thibodeau played well again, and I might have to be forced to retract my earlier disdain, I guess you can call it, for Thibodeau. I really did not like him. I thought we really wasted the number 5 overall draft pick on him last year, but he's starting to come around for sure. I mean, the stats are there this year, 100%, but like he's actually impacting games, and there's a difference, right? There's how many pressures or how many sacks do you get? But when you're watching the game, it's the eye test. Are you impacting games? And last night, Monday night, was a game, again, that he definitely impacted the game. He made the quarterback move, right? He caused a fumble. He did some things that really impacted the game. And he's been coming on this year, I have to say. And that's really, again, with stats aside, you know, previously, right, he didn't, whether he got sacks or pressure, you know, he didn't do that at all last year. Like, you know, there was a couple of games he had a sack last year, but infrequently this year, or really never earlier in the year, did he actually impact the game, like get him in key spots or in times that we really needed it. But he definitely stepped his game up some. So not only does he have good stats this year, you could see it now watching him in the most recent games, and that's a great thing. Other notes. I don't have a lot of faith in our backup place kicker, Randy Bullock, who came in at the end and kicked the game-winning field goal, but he made the big one, so that's really what matters. He did miss one earlier in the game, but he hit the one that mattered, and that was great. Saquon Barkley ran mostly well, besides the ridiculous fumble that he had. If for some reason he didn't catch the game, as the Giants were already up a score and trying to go up 2 scores, Barkley had a long run, ended up, you know, kind of getting tripped up, but then sort of regained his balance. And then for some reason, sort of fell on his own deep in Green Bay territory, fumbled the ball away, and Green Bay returned it about 30 or 40 yards the other way, took over, went down, and took the lead with 1.5 minutes left in the game. So had we not come back and won the game, that ridiculous Barkley fumble would have cost us the ball game. And I don't know. Sometimes I think he's in his own head. I read some comments after the game about whether he should go in or out of bounds. He didn't know what to do. I tripped myself. Like, I don't know. Sometimes he's so in his head, it's just ridiculous. It just looked terrible, stupid. He fell apparently on his own or tried to tackle himself. I don't know what he was doing. Bottom line is he fumbled on his own and it could have cost us the game. But other than that, he had some good runs and played hard. And I don't see him quite hesitating as much as he usually does in the holes, and that makes me happy. I want him to hit the holes with speed and not just sit there and stutter step and do spins in the backfield. I want him to hit a hole and, you know, take a 1 yard gain or a 1 yard loss as opposed to like a 5 yard loss because he's trying to dance around 3 people. So whatever it is, I want him to get, you know, the tough yards, and he's been doing better at that lately, but I'm still set on my position that no running back needs $10 or $12 million a year. It's just a silly thing. But he ran really well and he helped us win on Monday night, other than that ridiculous fumble. Andrew Thomas, Dexter Lawrence returned. They were both out with injury, and that certainly helped the Giants on Monday night. Let's face it. Andrew Thomas on offense and Dexter Lawrence on defense are two of our better players. cornerback Deontay Banks. I want to talk about him for a minute. He had a really good game. He made a key diving breakup, deflected a pass away. It was a potential TD pass late in the game. He also led the team apparently with 12 tackles I saw afterwards, which is great. So he's coming along. Other notes, Fox noted that the Giants have the youngest defense apparently in the NFL with an average starting age of 25.5 years. And, you know, some games it certainly looks like it, right? Because this defense has not been consistent. They get a lot of praise at times, but sometimes when they don't do well, it doesn't get noted. Like, I heard them getting praise after the Dolphins game, which I was cracking up on. They gave up like 560 yards to the Dolphins, who won over the Giants going away. They scored like 35-something points and 560 yards. Oh, they held them to 560. Come on, guys. And there were several other games where they were just a disaster, but they've had other games this year where they played really, really well. And they kind of hung in here tonight. I wouldn't say that the Giants defense was particularly great, but they made some plays all night from different spots. I mentioned the key deflections and tackles. There was a few sacks in there and some key stops. What went unnoticed much, I would say as well, is after Green Bay came down and scored with a minute and a half left, they took the lead 22-21, and they went for a two-point conversion, and the Giants defense stopped them, and that ended up being the key. Had they made that, and the Giants kicked the field goal at the end, it only ties the game and puts it in overtime. It doesn't win it. So stopping them on the two-point conversion was not really talked about afterwards, but it ended up being a key, you know, factor in the Giants' win. The Giants, by the way, continue to be without key weapons, and I mean key weapons. I mean, although, as I mentioned, Andrew Thomas and Dexter Lawrence returned, they're still, so keep in mind, prior to today, they were without those two monsters, but even with them returning, we're still without, obviously, Daniel Jones, our starting quarterback for the rest of the year, starting tight end, Darrell Waller, he's a star, and he's out, right? Our all-pro kicker, Graham Gano, is still out for the year. We have right tackle Evan Neal still hurt, and three other offensive linemen, Zudo, Pert, and Lemieux, are also on the IL. So we are still kind of the walking wounded with some big names. Obviously, Daniel Jones, Darren Waller, Graham Gano still out. And last week, we had Andrew Thomas and Dexter Lawrence to that list. And somehow we managed to win three games in a row behind Tommy DeVito while being shorthanded. So that speaks volumes about the team in itself. And unfortunately, you know, it doesn't help our draft position very much, but you know, at this point we may be out of a position to get a good quarterback next year, which in the long run is going to definitely hurt this franchise. We'll see what, you know, the brain trust does on the Giants and how much Shane wants to trade to move up or what he wants to do. You know, there is the smallest of small chances that, you know, Tommy DeVito could end up being Purdy and just start winning the rest of the year and somehow become the Giants quarterback. I don't know that that's possible, but there are flashes of brilliance in him. I have to say, as I watch these last three games, there's some flashes in DeVito, which make you think he might be able to do some stuff. That said, while the Giants have won three games in a row, the last two wins were over Washington, who we always beat and is not good, and New England, who's fucking terrible. They're an awful team. They were not great wins, and they were ugly wins against awful teams. This win was different, although the Packers didn't play all that well. The Giants kind of did, you know, led by our new Italian stallion, Tommy DeVito. There were plenty of mistakes for sure. You know, the Barkley fumble and some other silliness on the Giants side and a punt that went off a special teams guy back and some other silliness. But despite all that, the defense made some big plays. And let's face it, we get a walk-off field goal. We get the win. Giants are feeling good about themselves. And, you know, hey, we're 5-8. Let's see what the future holds. So good for Danny DeVito. It's such a good story. And it's something to make Giant fans feel good in a season that is completely lost at this point. So, good stuff. I'm going to go on and talk about Rutgers. So, moving on to Rutgers basketball. Rutgers got a huge win on Sunday. They beat Seton Hall 70-63 on the road at the Rock up in Newark. And it was a badly, badly needed win for a team that had really been reeling a bit in Rutgers basketball. After we got blown out by an excellent Illinois team. I think Illinois is just a tremendous team. I really feel like they're going to go far this year. And also getting blown out by what is maybe a decent Wake Forest team. The Rutgers basketball season kind of seemed in doubt a little bit. And, you know, if you know Rutgers basketball, you know that in recent years, you know, we have not been intimidated by anyone. Let me tell you, other teams are intimidated by us at this point. That's how good we've gotten. And Rutgers is almost never out of any game that we've played in the last 5 or 6 years under Steve Pico, who has really built kind of a, you know, a rising program here. Let's face it, we beat the number one team in the country, who happened to be Purdue, twice, 2 years in a row. They were number one 3 years ago, and they were number one last year. Bottom line is, you know, we beat Purdue, the number one team in the country, twice. We won, let's see, four ranked teams in a row we had. We had victories over four ranked teams in a row in February a couple years ago. We beat good teams. We've done it consistently, and in the games that we lose, we're not blown out. We're in most of the games, and it was a little unsettling to see this Rutgers team be blown out two games in a row. After Illinois, I wasn't quite as concerned because I really, in my heart, think that Illinois is just an excellent team. The Wake Forest game really concerned me because I don't think Wake Forest is that great, but to see us get outperformed that badly in a number of concerning areas, in addition to shooting and free throws, really rebounding in particular, was an obvious concern after Wake Forest. It was in doubt. This season was in doubt. And I'm not going to say one game cures it, but this win over Seton Hall went a long way to applying salve to the wound a little bit, right? The win snapped, by the way, an 11-game losing streak in the regular season for non-conference losses outside of Piscataway. So 11 straight times before this game when we played, you know, a non-conference team away, we lost and we snapped that streak. So thank God. The win also helped alleviate, you know, some glaring concerns in a bunch of areas. And in my mind, it was because Rutgers was really, really buoyed by the return of Moa Mag. And he seemed to make everyone and everything better for Rutgers basketball upon his return. It was amazing. It was like, you know, finally the medicine for the ailing, you know, team was back. I don't know what it was, but he came back and the whole team looked better in every single area. Rutgers finally shot well somehow, amazingly, from three-point land with, you know, Gavin Griffiths hitting 3 of 6, Andre Hyatt hitting 3 of 6, although he didn't do much else. Noah Fernandez hitting 3 of 5, and Jermichael Davis actually, believe it or not, hitting 2 of 3. And Rutgers played also much, much better defense. Start to finish. That, to me, was the most obvious thing of everything, was Rutgers playing better defense. And really better defense in a way that we haven't seen since Mag was last year, at the end of last year. We went 3-8 without Mag at the end of last year, between, you know, last year and some of the start of this year. 3-8, right, at the end of last year without him. And certainly his effect is felt all over the court. And for him personally, it was an encouraging start. Now, this is only one game. I don't want to overblow because, you know, one game, but he looked right at home. He really did. He hit a few shots. He got 8 rebounds, an assist. He ended up with 8 points, but critically, he also defended really well, and he might be Rutgers' best defensive player. We don't have McConnell this year, our defensive player of the year, so we need other people to step up, and it's critical that Mag defends well, and he did. And Rutgers' guards, as you know, are quite small this year compared to previous years. We lost Mulcahy. We lost, you know, McConnell. Those are some big guards. Now, Noah Fernandez is 5'11". Jermichael Davis is 6'2". Those are not awfully big guards. So having Moop Mag back, who's 6'7", is huge. And that, I mean that both literally and figuratively. I mean, he can guard almost every position. He can guard the 1, 2, 3, 4, or 5, and he can guard them pretty well. And he's fast, and he's athletic, and has a very wide wingspan. Right. When he stands and spreads his arms, you know, it's different than when you have Noah Fernandez doing the same thing. It's probably a foot more that he covers, if not more. He's also good on the fast break, as we saw. He kind of Euro stepped in there, weaved in between a couple Seton Hall defenders, scored. He basically makes everyone better, and he certainly made everyone better against Seton Hall. Other parts of the game, Amorie was once again finally a dominant defender on Sunday. He blocked seven Seton Hall shots, seven. And he actually intimidated, I think, even more than that, besides the one he actually blocked. He probably intimidated maybe seven or eight others where they just didn't shoot and pass the ball out. Seton Hall was clearly and undeniably intimidated in the paint on offense, and it really showed in Seton Hall's play. Also, and importantly as well, we also got our best game yet from Jamichael Davis. Now, he did a great job defending, as he always does, but he finally also had a good game offensively, which I have been on him about. And I know he's a freshman, and I know that he's got to learn and blah, 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 but I kept hearing all these good things about him, and he has been just pretty disastrous offensively prior to this game. There's been some talk about his really good assist to turnover ratio, which is true, and it continued on this night. He had six assists and only two turnovers. He even hit two of three on three-pointers, amazingly. He had 11 points. He finally had a good offensive night, and he hit some shots in key spots, and it really helped Rutgers, and that's good to see. So I had not seen, I guess, what some others were seeing, and now with this good offensive performance, I think it was a smart move starting Jamichael Davis, and I think it might be one that Pikel will continue. Now, I don't know if that's definitely true or not, because, you know, you have to think that Simpson is going to probably get some starts. I think Simpson has a lot more offensive talent than Jamichael Davis does, but it does seem like J. Mike is a much better defender and maybe a little quicker, but I really think it really depends on how Simpson does or doesn't develop. Simpson's had a tough start this year and has not been consistent. I was hoping that he would, him and Wolfolk, I was hoping would get off to better starts this year than they have. So it remains to be seen if something will kick in for Simpson. Also, let's see what else. Noah Fernandez played really well, really, really well. As did Gavin Griffiths, especially early on. Griffiths didn't do much later in the game, but he started out with a couple early threes that really helped start, you know, Rutgers on a good roll. And they had the lead early and they never really relinquished it. But Noah Fernandez played really frigging well. He hit some big threes. He made some big free throws, really when they needed it all night. Andre Hyatt was okay. I don't know. Yeah, I'm not a Hyatt fan. If you guys listen to this podcast, you know I am not a Hyatt fan. I just think he's overrated. I don't see what everyone sees in him. He has a couple of these games where he hits some threes and he looks good, but I don't know. He misses a lot of layups. He turns the ball over sometimes. He misses some open, easy shots, and I don't think someone that's that good would miss so many open, easy shots, but whatever. He played okay, I think. We'll see. Streakiness is not really a great thing. Let me find the stats page for this Rutgers game because there were some interesting things on it. Seton Hall was only 3 for 20 on three-pointers, which is just insane. I think they had one player alone, I forget it, his name is tip of my tongue, was 3 for 15. Shooting three-pointers on Seton Hall. How you let someone shoot 15 threes when they're not hitting them is amazing. But anyway, Seton Hall missed a lot of three-pointers, 3 for 20, where Rutgers, amazingly, was 12 for 24, 50% on three-point shots. So that is something you almost never see. Usually it's the other way around. Rutgers, 3 for 20. The other team is, you know, hitting three-pointers. But certainly Rutgers hitting three-point shots was a gigantic factor in winning this game. We did hit 75% of our free throws, which is good, better for us. We had 14 assists, which always bodes well. Having a lot of assists means that, you know, you're passing the ball around and you're getting shots off of passes as opposed to one-on-one. Rebounds ended up being even, 37 apiece, but we still gave up, which is better, certainly better. But, you know, and again, Mawat Mag had 8 rebounds, so that's part of it. Him being back really helps us in that area too as well. We were struggling left and right. It was really killing me. And one of the worst parts about it is we were giving up a lot of offensive rebounds. And in this game, we still did. They had 16 offensive rebounds, Seton Hall did, and that's still too friggin' many. So we have work to do there. We did have 10 block shots, of course, led by Amori, 7. And as far as our scoring, Fernandez led us with 19 points. He had a couple rebounds and assists as well. Jermichael Davis, as I said, had a really good game. He chipped in with 11 points, and he had a couple rebounds. He had 6 assists. He had a block, and he had only 2 turnovers. So 6 assists to 2 turnovers is really good. And then Amori ended up with 11 points, but 13 rebounds and 7 blocks. So that's nothing to you know, shush away. And Hyatt ended up with 9 points, all of them on his 3-point shooting. You know, he missed every single one of his 2-point shots, and he was 3-for-6 on his 3-pointer. So again, Hyatt's, I don't know, he's not as good as people say. I'm going to stick with that. Anyway, Gavin Griffiths ended up with 11 points as well, and he also had a block. It was a huge win for RU. I don't really have much more to say about this game other than it was a big win. It was needed after those 2 blowout losses, and the season seemed like it might be a worrisome long ride. But after the game, there's some hope for the postseason. There's some hope for future games. We're going to have to see if the team can keep growing. Rutgers typically, you know, is a team that can shut people down defensively. And when they weren't doing that and weren't rebounding, it was quite concerning. So we'll have to see what Pikel can do. And obviously we know that we have the tremendous, tremendous incoming freshman class in 2024. So if we can be at least decent this year, make the postseason, and then take whatever you get as a cherry on top, and then next season, you know, the sky's the limit. We'll have to see. Rutgers currently is 6-3 as they sit here. And 0-1 in the Big Ten, and then we take on Stony Hill Saturday at the Rack. So let's go RU, baby. That's it. That's all I have. I want to thank you for listening to Jersey Guy Sports. Please subscribe to the podcast. Like the podcast. Tell your friends about it if you can. That really helps out. And I'll be back with you with some more sports talk soon. Thanks, and have a good day.